Judge Welch.
Judge Welch is here.
We now have everyone on the line, so just let me know when you would like to start.
Judges Reedman and Moore, are you on the line, unmuted, and ready to go?
Judge Moore here, ready.
Judge Reedman also ready.
Perfect. Ellie, let's get started.
Okay. Ms. Belmont, are you still present?
I am, thank you.
And Ms. Klingelhofer?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you very much. I will go ahead and start with the court cry. The Nebraska Court of Appeals is now in session. May all who come here be heard. May truth and justice be served by what we do here.
Thank you and welcome to the April call of the Nebraska Court of Appeals. This is Judge Larry Welch from Plattsmouth, Nebraska. I will be presiding judge today. On the line with us are Chief Judge Frankie Moore from North Platte. She's on the panel. And Judge Moore, are you there? And can you hear me okay?
I am, and I can. Thank you.
Thank you. And also joining us is Judge Francie Reedman from Gretna. She will be on this month's panel as well. Judge Reedman, are you on the line? And can you hear me?
Yes, I am, and yes, I can.
Thank you so much. Obviously, we are conducting oral arguments telephonically this month. I just want to make sure at this time the counsel are connected. And so in that regard, appellant's counsel, Ms. Belmont, are you there and can you hear me?
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you. Napoli's counsel, Ms. Klingelhofer, are you on the line and can you hear me?
I am, and I can hear you, Judge. Thank you.
Thank you both. Okay, so normally we would live stream these arguments. We are not live streaming today. However, we will be recording the arguments, and we will archive them. So in the event that there's any sensitive or confidential information that you have today, please remain sensitive to that in connection with your arguments. The rules have not changed in the sense that each of you will still have 10 minutes to argue today. However, so that we don't talk over each other, what we have been doing is allowing each of you to actually speak to your case for 5 minutes uninterrupted. At the 5 minute mark, then I will kindly interrupt you and ask if there are any questions among the judges. You can try and save time for a rebuttal, but I will suggest to you no one has had a chance to rebut yet as it relates to the way that we're doing this. But if there is time for the appellant, we will allow for that. Does anybody have any questions in that regard?
I do not, Your Honor.
Okay.
And this is Ms. Klingelhofer. I do not, Your Honor.
Thank you. So then let's get this matter started. The 1115 call. Case number 19-0874, Huddleston versus Huddleston. Counsel for the appellant, Ms. Belmont, you may begin.
Thank you, Your Honor. And may it please the court, Chief Judge, Your Honors, and counsel. My name is Lindsay Belmont, and I represent the appellant, Anne-Marie Cuddeback, formerly known as Anne-Marie Huddleston. Your Honors, this is a case about a mother fighting for what is best for the party's daughter, Erin, who at the time of trial in this matter was 13 years old. Erin suffers from cystic fibrosis, which is a chronic, life-threatening genetic disease that affects how her body processes or fails to process mucus. Erin has lived with cystic fibrosis her whole life. Now, at the time of the party's divorce decree, the district court found it was in Erin's best interest that my client have physical custody of her, as well as be the sole determiner of Erin's medical needs. Now, the matter at bar boils down to this. Nothing has changed since the entry of the last order warranting a modification of custody from my client to the appellee. There is no allegation that my client is unfit to maintain custody, and in fact, appellee testified to the contrary. And Erin's best interests are served by remaining in Ms. Cuddeback's physical care. Erin's health and welfare are at stake, and what is most important in this case is that Erin remain in Omaha, where she is minutes away from the Cystic Fibrosis Center, the only accredited center in the region, and close to her medical team so that she may receive the necessary and timely care she needs. So we are asking that this court find that the district court abuses discretion in finding that a material change in circumstances had occurred warranting a modification of custody, that the district court erred in finding it was in Aaron's best interest to relocate from Omaha to Kearney, that the district court abuses discretion in modifying legal custody sua sponte, and that the district court abuses discretion in ordering the parenting plan that it did. And for these reasons, we are asking that the district court's orders of August 24th, 2018 and August 22nd, 2019 be reversed, and this matter should be remanded back to the district court. Aaron's best interests mandate that she remain in Omaha with Ms. Cuddeback. And as someone living with cystic fibrosis, her general health and welfare require it. And her health and welfare are advanced in Omaha, given the close proximity to her medical team, which consists of doctors, respiratory therapists, nurses, social workers, psychologists, ENTs, and dietitians. Her health and welfare are advanced by the accessibility of clinical trials at the Cystic Fibrosis Center, and being under the primary care of the most important member of her team, which is her mother. Ms. Cuddeback has been Aaron's primary caregiver Aaron's whole life, and she has devoted every ounce of her being to ensure that Aaron's needs, medical, emotional, and physical, are taken care of. And as Aaron's custodial parent, Ms. Cuddeback managed her medical needs as though it were a full-time job. Ms. Cuddeback did all of these things for Aaron because it's what Aaron's best interests required. The appellee, on the other hand, was much more nonchalant, not as vigilant, and seemingly appeared to not take Aaron's health needs as seriously. Now, this case does involve the minor child's preference. And yes, Aaron's wishes should be considered under the best interest analysis. But it's important to note that the Nebraska Supreme Court has affirmed and reaffirmed that while a minor child's preference may be given consideration, it is not controlling. Aaron testified in camera, and her testimony should be given some weight, but certainly not the weight the district court afforded it. She's a teenager who probably prefers to be with her friends over her parents anyway. She is mature and intelligent, and she did state a preference to the trial court. However, that preference was not based on sound reasoning. In her testimony, you can see that she made sure to use buzzwords, and this court can see for itself the stark similarities between Aaron's testimony and that of her sister Bridget. And the district court even noted in its August 24th, 2018 order, its concern that Aaron had been influenced by the appellee. In Aaron's testimony, she never once discussed the impact moving to Kearney would have on her cystic fibrosis, and she never acknowledged the substantial benefits living in Omaha has in regard to her cystic fibrosis. Instead, she stated two reasons for wanting to move to Kearney, those being her desire to attend Kearney Catholic, as well as to be near her siblings. But Aaron's desire to attend a different school is legally insufficient to change custody. Neither parent takes issues with the education Aaron was receiving at Christ the King.
I'm going to interrupt you now. I'm sorry,
yes.
But we're at the five-minute mark, and I do want to make sure that we have time for questions. And I'm going to lead with a couple if I can. And
please.
I want to start by, in your introduction, you talked about the concept of finding that the mother was unfit. Is that necessary as it relates, though, to a material change in circumstances? Does the court need to find that the mother's unfit in order to do that?
Your Honor, under Nebraska jurisprudence, that is one piece of it. In a modification action, the moving party needs to allege whether the custodial parent is unfit or that the best interests of the child require that a modification of custody is warranted.
Okay. Separately, I'm going to shift from physical custody for a second and ask a question about legal custody here. The court, there was joint legal custody both before and after. However, there was a change as it relates to what I'll call the tie-breaking authority. Did that require a separate material change in circumstances and best interest analysis as it relates to joint legal custody with that change?
It does, Your Honor. And why it requires a material change and the requisite analysis is because giving a tiebreaker to a parent is essentially an award of sole legal custody. Under a joint legal custody arrangement, which the parties did have, and the court did order previously that my client would have final say over medical decisions, it does require the parties to communicate and discuss issues. In the event of an impasse, one party does get to make a unilateral decision. And in this case, neither party pled for a change in legal custody. And in fact, the record reflects that the appellee attempted to modify, or excuse me, to amend his complaint to include that specific requested relief. And the record reflects that he then withdrew that request because it would have required our opportunity to respond to that amended complaint. So yes, a change in legal custody, a change in awarding which parent has that unilateral decision-making authority does require that there be a material change. And in this case, the trial court received no evidence that it would be in Aaron's best interest that legal custody be modified. And it wasn't, it was reversible error that the court awarded Mr. Huddleston with that final decision-making authority.
If the court was to find that physical custody should be changed, and if the court believes that would be in the best interest of Aaron at that point to change that tie-breaking authority because of the medical issues here, would that be an abuse of discretion without a full analysis of material change in best interest?
I apologize. Can you repeat that question?
Oh, gosh. Well, I tell you what, at this point, I'm going to, just so everybody else has an opportunity, Judge Reedman, do you have any questions?
Well, I'm going to kind of rephrase what your question was. Ms. Belmont, if the court changes physical custody to the father, does that change necessitate the change in the decision-making, tie-breaking authority for healthcare in and of itself, or do we still need an analysis of a material change?
We still need an analysis of a material change, and it is clear under the Nebraska Parenting Act, we have two types of custody in Nebraska. We very clearly have legal custody, and we very clearly have physical custody. And the effect of saying a modification of physical custody naturally requires a modification of legal custody is a slippery slope that I don't think this court wants to engage in. There are plenty of cases where a parent has sole physical custody of a child, but both parents share joint legal custody, and they make those decisions jointly. So a modification in physical custody from one parent to the other does not necessitate that now custodial parent gets legal custody as well. There must be separate best interest findings as to the two separate types of custody that we have under the Nebraska Parenting Act.
I don't have anything further. Thank you.
Chief Judge Moore.
Thank you. And just to follow up on that, Ms. Belmont, do you have any case law authority that tells us we have to do a separate analysis on the legal custody?
Your Honor, I would point this court simply to the Nebraska Parenting Act under the Nebraska under Nebraska Revised Statutes in Chapter 43. I would say in terms of case law, there's plenty of case law under Nebraska jurisprudence showing separate analysis when we're dealing with legal custody and when we're dealing with physical custody. And it's clear that these are two different types of custody, each requiring their own best interest analysis.
Thank you. And then finally, with regard to showing a change in circumstances, I believe you mentioned, and correctly so, that we look to the last modification order, which was 2015. Is that my understanding?
That's correct.
And at that time, the court denied a modification of custody, but modified the parenting time schedule because of your client's move to Omaha. Is that also true?
Yes, that is true.
Does our record tell us, was that a contested trial in 2015?
Yes, Your Honor, it was.
And then finally, does our record include any information about how medical appointments were handled while everyone resided in Kearney.
Your Honor, there was testimony presented at trial, and it is true that the parties have another daughter, Bridget, who also suffers from cystic fibrosis. And when everyone lived as a family unit, meaning Ms. Cuddeback was still a part of that family unit, they were able to facilitate Bridget doctoring in Omaha with her condition. I would point out that the consistent is Ms. Cuddeback. So she is the one who oversaw Bridget's medical care at that time. She oversaw Aaron's medical care, and she continues to oversee Aaron's medical care. And in regard to the argument that Bridget was able to doctor in living in Kearney, I would just ask this court to consider that Ms. Cuddeback and Aaron lived in Omaha for 3 years, and Aaron got to take part in the vast benefits offered to her in supporting her cystic fibrosis management. And just because the circumstances years ago were such that both parties working together could manage Bridget's medical care doesn't mean that they have to do it that way now for Aaron. And it doesn't mean that when the families were living together and both parties were managing Bridget's and Aaron's healthcare under one roof, that it went without hardship. So any changes that have occurred between 2015 and 2018 in regards to the medical care are positive changes. And those can be attributed to my client and everything that she's provided for Aaron by being in Omaha, having her closer to every physician, and there are a number of physicians that she needs.
Okay, thank you. We're quite a bit over at this point. Are there any further questions, Chief Judge Moore?
No, thank you.
Judge Reedman?
No, thank you.
Okay, thank you. And Allie, how much time do we go over?
3 minutes, 3 minutes and 12 seconds, Your Honor.
Thank you. We'll go ahead and add that time to the appellee.
Okay.
Appellee's counsel, are you ready to proceed?
I am, Your Honor. Can you hear me okay?
I can.
Okay. Well, thank you, Chief Judge Moore, judges, counsel, may it please the court. My name is Elizabeth Klingelhofer. I'm an associate at Jacobson Orr, Lindstrom & Holbrook & Kearney, and I represent Mr. Robert Huddleston, the appellee in this case. As appellee, we're asking this court affirm the district court's order in all respects, especially the modification of physical custody of the party's minor child from appellant to appellee. And I just want to highlight for your honors that across the board, the standard of review here is abuse of discretion. Now, that goes for all procedural decisions regarding the motions to transfer and the motions to continue, but it also goes for the modification of the decree, because although a modification of decree is reviewed de novo, it's affirmed absent an abuse of discretion. And as those courts know, that's a high bar, meaning that the evidence has to be clearly unreasonably against the evidence, against reason for the district court to be reversed absent abuse of discretion. Now, in this case, the district court did not err in finding a material change of circumstances modifying custody from appellant to appellee. In this case, the desires and wishes of a minor child, if of appropriate age and comprehension, and if desires and wishes of a minor child are based on sound reasons, that can be a triggering event to modify physical custody and count for a material change in circumstances. In this case, I hope I'm saying this correctly, it's the Florchinger case decided by this court in 2016 is directly akin to this case on multiple levels. First, the court in that case stated that a modification based on child preferences, if it meets the standard of sound reasoning and that child is of appropriate age and comprehension, can be a triggering event for a change, material change in circumstances for physical custody. In that case, the district court evaluated best interest standards of school, friends, home environment, quality of life between the mother's home and the father's home. And both parents in that case were found to be fit, but the 13-year-old's intelligent and sound reasons of wanting to live with his father changed physical custody. So, Your Honor, Judge Welsh, I believe you asked the question of whether unfitness is required to modify physical custody, and I'd point you to the Florchinger case and state no, because in that case, both the mother and father were fit, but the 13-year-old's preference, which again was sound reason in the minor child, was of a comprehensive age there, the physical custody change was affirmed by this court. In this case here, our minor child testified in camera, and I just want to underscore the importance of the district court getting the credit of seeing and observing her in chambers. And after being able to see and hear and observe her, as well as the other witnesses that testified live in court, the district court found that our minor child is 13. She's intelligent, she's mature, and her preference to live with her father, to attend Kearney Catholic in Kearney, to be closer to her friends, to her siblings, all of that was a sound reason for changing physical custody. And I think it's clear that the testimony corroborates the minor child's preferences here, specifically when it comes to the home life and the quality of life between appellant and appellee's home. The court considered at the best interest analysis going through the respective home life, especially given the appellee's and the appellant's subsequent marriages after their divorce, went through the school, friends, activities, sibling relationships, and of course underscored and highlighted the importance of the minor child's medical history and treatment. Cystic fibrosis is a took up a good chunk of the court's time, and to say that the district court didn't give the medical treatment and history of our minor child appropriate credence would be, I think, an error to state, because the district court not only heard about cystic fibrosis from each parent, but from the minor child herself, and also from her older sister, Bridget, who suffers from the same condition and is now a respiratory therapist living in the Kearney area. I just want to underscore as well, too, that there's absolutely no evidence that Appley, who is a patient, loving, engaged father, who has a more effective parenting style dealing with this minor child's cystic fibrosis condition. There's no evidence whatsoever that he has ever mismanaged the minor child's health in regard to a cystic fibrosis condition, nor is there any evidence that he was anything but supportive to Bridget in her cystic fibrosis treatment as well.
Okay, at this time, thank you very much. We're at the 5-minute mark, and so just to make sure that we have time to address questions, I'd like to go to the question stage if we could now, and I'm going to lead with this one. Did you need to plead for a change in legal custody for the court to reach that?
Your Honor, I don't believe that we needed to, and I'll tell you why. The paramount consideration in custody decision cases is always the best interest of the child. I think after the district court engaged in that best interest of the child analysis, finding a material change in the modification of physical custody, that best interest analysis is the same when it comes to the tie-breaking decision as you phrased it. So I don't believe a separate best interest analysis is required. And even if it was required, the district court hit all the appropriate factors that would be needed. Now, regarding specifically pled, I don't believe that being specifically pled is required. I think that the notice pleading rules would apply here. And if you look at the complaint to modify, specifically in paragraph 4, I believe it's on page 2 of our complaint to modify, we allege that there's a tie-breaking decision that was in favor of the appellant. And then when we prayed for a change in physical custody, we prayed for all relief that was equitable and just that would be flowing from that decision, which I believe a decision when it comes to medical decisions, especially for this minor child who has heightened medical needs, and more decisions that need to be made, possibly on an emergency, semi-emergency, or just daily basis, that would it would be serving the child's best interest if that custody decision or that medical decision could be made by the person who's in a primary custody. So I hope I answered that question correctly.
I think you did, and maybe you assumed what my next question was going to be, and perhaps you answered it. I think you're telling me that you believe that as it relates to physical custody, once the court did a material change analysis in a best interest analysis, if part of that best interest analysis involves changing that aspect of legal custody, the court could do that without separately undergoing a material change analysis and best interest analysis with regard to legal custody. Is that your position?
I believe so, Your Honor, because honestly, after reading the court's order, and it's a longer order, you can see all the factors that the court weighed, especially given the treatment of the minor child's medical conditions and decisions when the parents were together versus separated in Omaha and in Kearney, and what kind of decisions need to be made on a daily basis. The district court highlighted how many pills this minor child takes per day, the importance of her periodic treatments in Omaha, or chest compressions. I think all of that evidence weighs in the best interest standard, and the court specifically found that both parents are great parents. I think good was used, excuse me, that are they're good parents. And because there's no evidence whatsoever that the appellee has ever mismanaged her health care, finding a change in physical custody and that best interest analysis would also spark a change in this final decision making. I think it's the district court simply did it to decrease custody wars about every single medical decision because there are so many in this minor child's life.
Okay. Thank you. Judge Reedman?
I don't have any questions at this point. Thank you.
Thank you. And Chief Judge Moore?
Just a couple of procedural questions so I understand the posture, and I know it would be in the pleadings, but I'm sure you can answer it more quickly for me. On the decision-making authority, that's the only thing the court modified in this last go-round with regard to legal custody, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
In other words, we retain joint legal custody. Can you tell me when the tie-breaking authority, if you will, was placed in the appellant? Was it at the time of decree or the modification?
I wish I would have reviewed that to confidently answer. Your Honor, I believe it is at all times maintained joint legal custody. So the first place I would go back is look at the original decree. If not there, it would be in the 2015 decree. The court would have at least reiterated when it restated the parenting plan and the parenting time with that. So I'm sorry I can't point you to an exact page on the record for that.
That's okay. Thank you very much. That's all I have, Judge Welch.
Okay. Additional time, is it? Still a couple minutes, right? So you still have just a couple of minutes left if you'd like to resume your argument, or Ms. Klingelhofer, have you completed your argument today?
Although I should stop talking, I will make a 30-second point if I could, Your Honor. I as far as the procedural decisions, I just wanted to highlight that this is the third time that our case is up on appeal. The first time the case was appealed, it was dismissed for lack of jurisdiction regarding a lack of a final order of a withdrawal for a motion for new trial. That's case 18-905 with this court. We went back to the district court, got that final order, appellant appealed a second time, and then we were dismissed for failure to incorporate a parenting plan. That was 18-1053. We went back, we requested that the district court have a hearing on the mandate, incorporate that parenting plan, and we're finally back in front of you. The reason I bring that up is because at all times we had completed briefing, And so appellant has always, or at least since the filing of my initial brief on the first case, has been on notice about the procedural issues of there's being no record for an abuse of discretion to be reviewed on the procedural decision, specifically the motions to transfer and the motion to continue trial. And even being on notice, made no attempt to incorporate or preserve a record for this court to review those assignments of error. So I just wanted to point that out to the court. And if there be no other questions in that regard, I will just submit the case.
Judge Reedman?
Nothing further. Thank you.
And Chief Judge Moore?
No, thank you.
We would thank you both. Once you hang up, you're not going to be able to rejoin us, but the matter is now submitted. We appreciate your attendance today and your participation, and we would kindly now ask that you disconnect.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you both.